Welcome to How to Fix It. I'm John Avlon. Now, this is a special edition of How to Fix It, what might be called a history nerd edition or the history behind the headlines. As many of you know, I write history books and it is a great love. And I think perspective is the thing we have least of in our politics, and keeping things grounded in real history can do us a great service. But it's also about myth busting some of the stories that get passed around. And joining me today is probably the preeminent and certainly most prolific Abraham Lincoln scholar around, Harold Holzer. Now get this, he is the author or editor or co-editor of 54 books about Abraham Lincoln, the man I think we both agree is America's greatest president. Harold, it's great to see you.
Thank you, John. I'm exhausted hearing about the number of books, but ready to go.
This is going to be a fascinating conversation because you're going to tell a story that you have not told widely in public, but it really takes on one of these irresistible myths about Lincoln that seems to have gotten more and more attention. And the latest example is a very funny play called Oh Mary, which is on Broadway. It is considered to be a front runner for the Tony, and it is its author and star, as Mary Lincoln proclaims it, as a stupid play, as a compliment. This is done without research. This is utterly a bawdy historical, anti-historical romp that tweaks American history. But the central premise is that Abraham Lincoln is gay. And this is something that has been bandied about, carried forward. I think the log cabin Republicans repair to this idea that somehow Lincoln was secretly gay. And this was in large part advanced by Larry Kramer, the legendary AIDS activist, who in 1999 said that he had found secret diaries between Lincoln and Joshua Speed, indicating an intimate relationship. But he never produced those diaries. And you had a very illuminating conversation with him that I think is important to get out there in the record. Tell him.
Well, It was not an easy conversation to arrange. So the story was that Mr. Kramer had unearthed these diaries under the floorboards of Joshua Speed's home in Kentucky, a place I visited, by the way. It's a fabulous place. Lincoln actually did stay there and slept in the same room, probably the same bed as Josh Speed, when he had some romantic problems with Mary Lincoln in Springfield. He repaired, I love that verb, you used it, so I'll steal it, to Kentucky to stay with Speed. And then they exchanged a series of letters back and forth as each was courting a woman to marry. And they're pretty, we don't have Speed's letters to Lincoln, because Lincoln didn't save letters until he had a private secretary during his presidential campaign 20 years later. He had a lousy filing system, except for his legal files. His partner took care of that. Anyway, we do have Lincoln's letters to Speed. They're known. And, he asks things like, kind of, how did it go on the honeymoon? That's basically what he wants to know. Is everything okay? He's a nervous guy, even though he's over 30 years old. So we know that. What were these diaries? Well, Larry Kramer announced they were intimate diaries, and they showed that Lincoln and Speed had an intimate relationship. Just quick background, they did sleep in the same bed in Springfield for a couple of years. Lincoln arrived looking for a place to live. Speed had a big bed. It was not uncommon then for guys who were bachelors and who were not wealthy to room together to save money. In most cases, rooming together meant, quote, sleeping together, because there were more people than there were beds, frankly, and beds were expensive. So anyway, they slept together, often with third and fourth.
But I think important to clarify, though, that term sleep together, I mean, it's hard in our time, in very sexually liberated, sexually active era, to understand that can just indicate sleeping.
It means
not sex.
It means
it's important.
Sleeping we assume not sex anyway. Kramer claims that the diary showed that there was more than just dozing to the sleeping. And so I was interested because there had been a book or two that indicated that the proof was there. Lincoln had had relations not just with Speed, but with other men. There was a story about a colonel who was discovered in Lincoln's bed when he was president and when Mary was away. This guy happened to have something like 9 children and was keeping the president company in, you know, kind of quasi-public view because people were in and out of the bedroom. Anyway, that's another story. I decided I wanted to hear about the diary. I was dubious more about the diary than I was about the story, frankly, because piece paper doesn't survive under floorboards for 150 years. It just doesn't work that way with documents. They've got to be preserved at room temperature. With HVAC, cooled, no humidity. And most people who've been to Kentucky know that's not the case, you know, between April and November. It's pretty humid there. So I tried to get in touch with them, got nowhere. I was working for the Metropolitan Museum of Art in those days, and it was frustrating. I was never going to get to the bottom of it. I don't know if I wanted a report on it, but I wanted to see the diaries. I thought it was a great story if it was true. Anyway, one day in the Met dining room, one of our curators, whose name was Rebecca Kramer, passed by as I was, you know, meeting with a journalist, I guess. And she said, you know, my uncle really wants to talk to you. I said, who the heck is your uncle? She said, Larry Kramer. I said, you're kidding. I've been trying desperately through his publisher, through his publicist, through his theater company, whatever. And he has rejected all outreach. She said, no, I'll give you his number. So after a very fast lunch, I went down to my office and called him. He answered the phone. He said, I know who you are. I said, Mr. Kramer, this is a huge story. You've certainly got a lot of press on it. I write about Lincoln. He said, I know. I've read your stuff. It's not accurate, but I like the way you write. That was pretty nice. You know, I could deal with that. So may I see the diaries? He said, well, there are no diaries. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I made it up. I said, you made it up? He said, yes. My job is to raise consciousness that there are more gay people in American history than history allows to be acknowledged. So I made it up. And I said, and here I had all these questions about humidity and floorboards and mice and termites. And he said, don't bother. I made it up. I said, are you going to announce it? He said, hell no. And that was my conversation with the great Larry Kramer.
Okay, that's a very big deal in terms of setting the record straight.
But nobody wanted to hear it, John. Nobody, this is 26 years ago, maybe 25 when I finally reached it. Nobody cared. You know, it was all over the press, as you've no doubt investigated.
His allegations were all over the press.
Yeah.
Even though he never produced the documents.
Allegations, as much as they were a eureka moment, he suggested, and everybody took it seriously. Hey, I don't even know if he had ever been to Kentucky. So,
But this is interesting because first of all, the fact that without evidence, the story got such wide pickup, which is understandable from a sensational, puncturing the myths of American history, so to speak. But it turns out that was the real myth. What interests me is that you have actually tried to tell the story and get pickup for it, but have found no takers in a quarter century. Why do you think that is?
Because it's deflating. It's boring. And look, he was in his way a great, you know, artist, a pioneer in gay rights. He was not an easy person from stories I've heard from Ed Koch and Bella Abzug. I worked for Bella for years as a press aide and as a friend. They all
also worked for Mario Cuomo
and Mario, who didn't know Larry Kramer, as far as I know. But Bella, Koch, and Larry Kramer all lived in the same Greenwich Village apartment building. And that must have been hell because, you know, Koch and Kramer despised each other, and they were on the same line of the building. At least Bella was in the south elevator. She didn't have to deal with them taking out restraining orders against
And both gay, as it turns out. But yes. Both,
yeah. But Koch was if it's true,
was not gay, open,
he was closeted, and Larry Kramer was certainly not. Anyway, nobody's ever cared. I have a friend who worked for me at Roosevelt House, where I work now, as you know, John, who is writing the authorized biography of Larry Kramer. I've told him the story. I haven't told it in such a way that he says, slow down, I'm still writing. So I'm a little nervous that he's not going to use it. But I'm having dinner with him in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to say, okay, it's time that you let me write it for you and send you a long email, or you wrote it down, because it's got to be part of the story. Because right after this happened, Larry Kramer wrote a book about American history in which he said everybody was basically gay, from George Washington to, I don't know, JFK, which would surprise a lot of the people he was actually with.
It goes to show one of the pitfalls of identity politics, which is a righteous projection onto the world around you. And but if it doesn't bear relation to the facts, or you're making up facts to create a story, to shift a narrative, because it's performance art, not fact-based history and the pursuit of truth, which is what should guide every biography or every, you know, civic conversation worth its salt. You know, that's a big deal. And the resistance to people picking up the story, because, you know, the rumor's too good to check, it itself, I think, betrays a degree of bias.
Well, that's also the fact that you have to prove the negative rather than proving the positive was an interesting response, right? I mean, I have to prove, and he told me, not in words that I recall, I mean, I'll never forget his saying, I made it up, but I believe he implied that if he were contacted by someone to verify what I might say, he would deny it. I mean, that was, he was, you know, he was a playwright. He wasn't a historian. He was a kind of a fiction writer. That's why I'll be interested in reading this biography. And if, you know, am I allowed to say it? He was a really unpleasant person. He was angry. He was sick, which didn't help.
But no, and probably arguably had a lot to be angry about. But I think that was part of, you know, I mean, yeah, the reputation. But the motivation, again, both things can be true.
Yeah, the motivation was what I was always after. So if it's a given that he's making it up, he's not doing it to, quote, tarnish Lincoln's reputation or persona.
No.
He's doing it as kind of a more embracive act than a condemnatory act. In his view, you know, it explains his compassion. It explains his forgiving nature. It explains his artistic nature. And
his being Abraham Lincoln in that case.
Yeah.
I just think that, to use a word I hate, is so reductive, right? I mean, it you know, these qualities are not the purview of any gender, sexuality, race, ethnicity, you know, right, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is about whether you believe in universalism and individualism, or whether you play an identity politics game, which, for whatever righteous reasons, particularly during the AIDS epidemic, you know, can be understood. Still, you cannot allow metaphorical truth, however good it may feel for your short-term political purposes, to outweigh the actual truth. And the fact that it got so much pickup, and he never, and if you read the stories carefully, he never produced the diaries, not once. And now you're telling the story.
For very good reason, because there were no diaries. And anybody who's ever looked at a 19th century document knows you cannot store a diary or letters. Or I think he claimed he had love letters too, from Lincoln to Speed. You can't store them under the floorboards. It just doesn't work. I'm sorry, John. This was just about the time that Lincoln's home was gutted and rebuilt, the same way the White House was gutted when it was about to fall down during the Truman years. That is, the walls were kept because they were historic walls, and everything in the interior was taken out and rebuilt the same way, but with steel instead of wood. And they did that to Lincoln's Springfield home, and they did find little tiny pieces of paper that mice had probably used to build nests. No letters. People actually thought they might find something, which was ridiculous. That's what made me realize they would never, that nothing could remain under a floorboard. I was as excited as the next guy, hoping they'd find something in the Lincoln home, in the walls.
So, and it on a final note, though, I want you to ruminate on you know, the role of history when it becomes myth, and, you know, you and I've discussed this, but I deeply believe in a nation dependent on ideas, unifying ideas. We need to keep our common ideas, our common stories alive. And inevitably, great historical figures enter into the realm of myth. But and Lincoln is inevitably, I think, perhaps the biggest Rorschach test, because he's more approachable, because he's sunshine and shadow. You know, he's not as distant as a George Washington. But what do you make of that side of Lincoln, of everyone trying to claim a piece of him in a way that ends up becoming distended, unrelated to the reality?
You know, I kind of sympathize with it. I know you don't, but I, you know, I've just gotten finished producing a book on Lincoln and immigration. And it was interesting to see or to read how many groups claimed Lincoln as their own, aspirationally. He was really black, which explains his hatred of slavery. He was actually Jewish. He's descended from Melungeon Jews, which was an outcast group of Jews who had moved from Spain to England and hid their background. I mean, I would be as happy as the next Jewish guy to have Lincoln being Jewish. But he is someone. And what about the Marfan syndrome? There were hundreds of victims of Marfans who have written to me over the years claiming that they cling to life practically because they identify with Lincoln as the most heroic standard bearer of their really very difficult and often fatal before 35 years old disease. He didn't have it, but that hasn't stopped scientists from tracing it to both sides of his line.
Fascinating.
I did a piece in the Washington Post years ago, the 10 biggest myths about Lincoln. And one of them, I said, was that he was chronically depressed to the point of being unable to work. I got more letters about that than I got about anything that I've ever written, from people with depression who insisted that I had, you know, tarnished them by not respecting the fact that life and work and relationships are possible. I simply said in the piece that I didn't think the medication or the therapy was available in the 1830s that could have saved him if he had the kind of depression that really debilitates people today. But again, Lincoln is all things to all people, the sick, the infirm, the depressed, the wounded.
All of us. Lincoln belongs to all of us, and that's the most generous explanation.
He does live a little bit on all of us, aspirationally.
That's a wonderful note to end on. Harold Holzer, thanks for joining us on this History Behind the Headlines edition of How to Fix It.